past little while that he had not been well and has just been going downhill very gradually. And the whole family's been with him for a number of days. Priests ensured that there was someone with him right through the night. And he just quietly slipped away this morning, right about 9 o'clock.
You mentioned, Bishop, that he had been unwell for some time.
Well, he had been elected bishop a long time ago. He was chosen in 1974, and then he retired at a very early age because he had a stroke in 1993. So in that sense, he's been retired for a very long time. He struggled with a number of illnesses, obviously the debility from the stroke, from cancer as well. So it's remarkable he's lived so long into his retirement. But he was, as you know, round about there, he was very, very dedicated, particularly in the past 2 decades, to the hospice and to accompanying people to the door of death.
Yeah, I mean, he fought back remarkably from the stroke that did have quite an impact on him at the time, particularly with his speech.
Yeah, yes, it did. And I think he was a priest to his fingertips, so he wanted to minister to people. Even the motto, Sean, that he chose was "Feed my sheep." He had a real passion for trying to touch people in their pain, whether they were in jail in England for paramilitary offences or whether they were in the hospice. He just had a real passion for caring for people and bringing the gospel to them. He was a priest right to the very end. I think even though history will probably write about him for what he did until he retired in the mid-90s, it probably is what's happened in this past 20, 22 years through the hospice that will be the thing that's most alive in people's minds at the present time.
Yeah, many, many people would have encountered him through the hospice and at a very difficult time in their own lives.
He had me down shortly after I came here 2 years ago to join him for Mass on Sunday in the hospice. And there was a lovely, healthy congregation of 80 or 90 people, current residents, some of their families, families of former residents and so on. And there really was a little community of faith there that was journeying together. So it wasn't just him ministering to individuals. He had built a little community of faith. He was able to do that through that very particular and dedicated ministry that he had.
And then a number of years ago, he contracted cancer himself.
Yes, that's right. And had been struggling even over this past number of months. In the autumn there, he decided to retire from the hospice just because of illness that was coming back on him. And then he had a fall and an infection, and things just began to get too much for him.
And when did you last see him yourself, Bishop?
Oh, then twice yesterday. Yes. And obviously last week as well.
And how do you think he was handling the fact that he was coming close to death? Was he well aware of that?
His faith was very important. He wanted to have his beads in his hand. You can see him groping around the bed to be sure that he had his beads in his hand. He loved lead kindly light, lead thou me on, one step enough for me. So he obviously was a man for whom faith had been a central part of his life. And when you have that as a central part of your life, it becomes very obvious as you face the reality of death as well. That's really the biggest challenge, as it was for Jesus on the cross. Do I believe in the God who loves me? Do I believe in the goodness of the Father in all of this? So he was accompanied by a very prayerful environment with his siblings and nephews and nieces and so on, and some of the priests from here. And it was all very, very peaceful.
And Bishop, of course, I mean, he was well known throughout the city, but famous throughout the world, and famous particularly for his involvement during Bloody Sunday.
Yes. Well, there's that iconic picture, and you have it on the wall down there and down at Free Derry Corner, even though there were obviously other priests as well were out the same day doing exactly the same thing. But his work was not just limited to that. He worked very hard in the whole context of the civil rights movement. He sought to bring peace to Derry, realizing that Derry was a different place from the rest of the north, and that contacts could be made there that would help to move things forward. Very supportive of the Birmingham Six and people like that. I understand one of them came along to his final Mass in the hospice just out of a tribute to all that he had done for them when they were prisoners. He visited people in prison in the north, in the south, across the water. So he had an ongoing commitment to trying to bring peace and to building bridges with everybody who was involved. And clearly, he was very much involved in ecumenical work as well, a strong friendship with Bishop James Mahaffey, the Church of Ireland Bishop of Derry and Raphoe. And it was wonderful to see, as almost the last act of the Derry City Council before it became Derry and Strabane, the two of them were made free men of the city together.
And Bishop, yourself, when you took up the position as Bishop of Derry, did you speak much to him about that role?
Well, he obviously was very, very encouraging. In fact, my contact with him goes back a good bit longer than that. He was appointed in the very beginning of 1974, when I was in my first year out in the Irish College in Rome. And I remember this youngish priest coming out, had just been made Bishop of Derry. I didn't know him, but I remember him saying, "Please pray for me. Please pray for me." He obviously was facing it with great trepidation and a great sense that, yeah, the grace of God will see me through, but I feel very inadequate for the job. So I've always had that wonderful admiration for his courtesy, strength of character, for his sensitivity and recognition of his own frailty. So I've called to see him periodically up in his own house, and I always enjoyed his company because he was so clear on things.
When you say he was so clear, talk to us about that.
Well, for example, in May 2014, shortly after I arrived, there was Mass to celebrate 40 years of CMAC, the Catholic Marriage Advisory Council, and then became a CORD up in Lady O'Leary Church in Steelestown. And he arrived into the sacristy before the Mass. He said, "Donal, there's the homily I preached for the foundation of CMAC." he had everything written up. He was very good on diocesan archives as well as on personal archives. He was asked to speak to the Historic and Institutional Abuse Inquiry in Banbridge, and certainly those who were there said he was just phenomenal in terms of his ability to communicate not just the facts of poverty in Derry in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, but also his feelings as a country boy from Beleek coming in and seeing a poverty in an urban area, people crammed into this gerrymandered West Ward and so on of the city. So he was very clear in his own memory of events and of people and of who said what and who was responsible for what. So I think the documents he will have left behind will be of tremendous use to historians to help us understand just what was happening. Because so often in history, we hear about the politicians and the paramilitaries and the security forces and all of this. But actually, the role of clergy in the troubles, the jobs they had to do, the awful things they had to do, the wonderful presence that they were in the middle of communities, that's a story that remains to be written, and I hope someday it will, particularly with the aid of his papers.
Of course, he did take time to write books and to record his feelings and his history.
Yes, he did, surely. There were the two books. There was, Mr. Are You a Priest?
Yeah.
You can imagine some child in the city saying that, and then the one that he had about 5 or 6 years ago on A Troubled Sea, S-E-E rather than S-E-A, his memoirs. So he has some of that written down, but I'm quite sure that historians will want to delve into his well-organized papers to see just what they can understand about one more dimension of what was happening in Derry and the wider field over this past 40 years.
And how do you think he would have felt about the way the church had changed, particularly in recent years, and the attendances and all of that?
Well, I think his main concern was with ministering to people. And whatever the result of that is, that's in the Lord's hands. He wanted to be a pastor to the people, feed my sheep, as the motto said. Timothy Radcliffe, that lovely phrase, "The only thing I know about the future of the church is that it has one." And it's not our job to worry about where things are going. It's to do our ministry as well as we can, to be people of prayer, to be people of love, people of mercy, particularly in this year of mercy, and leave the rest up to God.
Of course, it's too soon, I suppose, to speak about arrangements, but many people will want to pay their respects to him.
Yes, we're sort of working on that at the present time, and we'll get all the information out as soon as we have it, Sean, because I know many people would want to come along at some stage during the next few days to pay tribute to him.
And Bishop, your own personal final memories of the retired Bishop of Derry, Dr. Edward Daly?
A man of great courtesy, a man of great gracefulness, a man who really has left his mark on the city and on the diocese and perhaps on the country as well, and I'm very blessed to be walking in his footsteps.